Yeah, pretty much anyone that focuses on search is, unless you're a tutorial channel, like that is really the only case, you are wasting all your time. I mean, nobody, when was the last time you like went to YouTube and you typed in Minecraft videos, you know, like you're going to find the creators you like because it's going to suggest them to you. Like the only time you're searching is if you're trying to find an answer. And also search is like the least valuable viewer, because if you're searching, generally you're looking for something specific. And once you get that, you're leaving. When you're browsing and suggesting videos and clicking, you don't really have a goal. And so you're going to stay a lot longer and more likely become a fan.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to My Social Life. This is the podcast where we teach you how to grow on social media by talking to the people that have actually done it. I am your host, Jacob Kelly. As always, today's podcast is powered by TrueFan. And today on the show, we are joined by Zach Spangler, who's better known as Loverfella on the internet. He's been making videos for over half a decade, and today he's sitting at over 2.9 million subscribers on his main YouTube channel and over 845,000 on his second channel. I cannot be more excited to have him here on the podcast today. Zach, welcome to the show.
What's up?
I'm excited to have you here, man. Where I like to start these podcasts is I want to know, who was Zach before YouTube?
Ooh, great question, man. Zach was honestly like probably like the last guy that would ever become a YouTuber or a business owner, because I was, I was the shyest kid growing up. Like, I honestly didn't raise my hand from third grade until, actually never. I'd be honest with you, I never raised my hand once. So I literally never talked. I had super bad anxiety, and I just like, I didn't really, you know, I would never have been here. And then, I played some sports, was into soccer a lot and stuff, but I was kind of like your normal student athlete, mega shy kid that didn't talk ever. Like, I would always sit in the back. Like, even in college, I'd be sitting there and I'd be in like some crazy engineering class and I'd have no idea what's going on. My friends are like, oh, this is easy, and I would not raise my hand because I'd be like, nah, I'll just be confused, I'm not about to do that. It was pretty crazy.
And so you said like you were so the shy kid that wasn't really into entrepreneurship or anything like that, never would have guessed that you would have been this business owner and content creator, but like the kind of the early seeds of entrepreneurship, correct me if I'm wrong, but were kind of spurred by RuneScape, right?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, we didn't like, you know, my family was like, you know, probably like lower middle class. Like, we weren't like, we definitely weren't loaded or anything. So like when I wanted my $10 RuneScape membership, my parents, I didn't even ask, to be honest, because I knew they'd say no. So I was like, if I want this, I got to figure out how to get it. And so I was, I don't know, 13 or something, found some super sketchy website where like you could like freaking click on ads and you'd get one penny. Maybe a lot of times it would scam you and just give you a virus, but you know, you did this for a couple months and you'd eventually get like $10. And so I would do this for like, I'd come home from school, from soccer practice, I would click ads and I would get my membership. And like, that's where I realized like, yo, internet's kind of nice, I can make money here. And like, that's kind of where it started. It's kind of weird though.
But then, so it wasn't for many years after that, that you started the YouTube channel, right? So I know, like, I think it was early years in college, like you were trying to find some ways to make money online. Like, I think you started writing articles or something before the YouTube channel. So what led to you starting YouTube?
Yeah, so actually I started YouTube right after I clicked on these ads with my friends. And we had a channel called Loverfella because like the story is like my friend broke up with his girlfriend. I called him, like I said, you poor fella. And my other friend said the word lover. The stars aligned and we said the words together and are like, yo, let's make a YouTube channel called Loverfella. So then we started this channel. It was great. We got no views, but we had fun with it. And we finally made $100. And I was like, boys, I want all this money because I'm the editor, I'm the idea creator. I want this to help us. They didn't like that. Long story short, channel broke up. Then I was like, crap, now what? So I start writing articles for a website. I think it was called Squidoo or something. I don't think it's in business anymore. And I would make like $20 a month writing articles. And then I did, you know, I didn't make a lot. It wasn't great. And finally, we get to college. Articles aren't working. I buy a computer with all my money, like literally all my money. And I'm like, yo, I'm $80,000 in debt. And I just bought a $2,000 computer. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I'm freaking out and, I'm like, yo, I really need to figure out how to make some money. So initially my thought was like, you know what? I'm going to play games with my very expensive computer and post videos showing the graphics on an expensive computer. And I bet I'll be a millionaire. That was kind of my thought process, to be honest.
And so you upload that first Binding of Isaac video and you have the thought that I'm going to be famous one day when you upload it. Where did that confidence come from?
Oh boy. That's a great question, to be honest. I felt like, you know, Roman Atwood lives near where I grew up. And so he's actually the reason I started. So I came home from college. My brother's like, yo, Zach, this guy named Roman Atwood has got like 4 million subscribers. And he's like, he's from Ohio, from here. And I'm like, what? made me realize like, oh, wait a minute. If he could do this, why can't I? And it was kind of this moment where I was like, all right, well, I'm gonna go be famous then. And like, literally, it was just like this moment where I was like, started thinking. And I was like, you know, everything I've ever tried, I've been able to do. So I was like, why couldn't I do this? You know, if I wanted to get into engineering school, my guidance counselor said, you're not going to make it. And I made it. She said, you're not going to graduate. And I graduated. You know, I had to lose weight and I did it. Like everything I've wanted, I did it. And I was like, why can't I do this?
And so the first way, I guess you could say, you tried to promote the videos to become famous might not have worked. And that was Reddit. Because Reddit's not big on self-promotion.
I don't even know how you know that, to be honest. I must have said that before. But yeah, that's where I started.
I think it was 5 months, 11 days, you got your first 100 subs. So, and then by the end of that, by the end of year one on YouTube, and correct me if these numbers are wrong, but you had 25,000 subs and 2 million views. So what the hell happened from 5 months, 11 days to the rest of that year that allowed your channel to just kind of start to get some of that hockey stick growth?
So initially, like you said, I posted on Reddit because I was like, yo, I'll trick these Reddit people and they're going to come view me and I'll be famous. Didn't work. And I did it consistently. Every subreddit, I was banned everywhere. I had so many accounts. I mean, man, it was bad. And they disliked me a lot. So that didn't work. But then I got this idea to create really short tutorials because I always saw people on Reddit complain about how long people's videos were. Like, yo, YouTube's so stupid. You make a 10-minute video for a 5-second clip. And I was like, huh, fine. I'm going to make the 5-second clip. And so that's basically what I did. I released a series of 30 tutorials on a game called Ark. And they were like 2 minutes, I think maybe 3 minutes tops. They're very fast. I was like, you know, guys, today I'm going to show you this. Here we go. But with less energy. And I shared those in the subreddit. And then people loved it. And they upvoted it because they were like, yo, this guy's not like wasting our time. Let's go. And they actually kind of made a name for myself there until I, you know, grew a little bit. And then they hated me again.
And let's talk about confidence on camera. Because like you talked about, like you weren't, no one would have ever thought you would have become this content creator entrepreneur. And even looking back, like those early videos, like, and to today, like it's a night and day difference with your confidence on camera. So what have you done to become more comfortable? Is it just putting the reps in and putting videos out every day like you did? Or how did you get so confident on camera?
Yeah, it was literally putting the reps in. You don't understand how bad my anxiety was. Like I actually would have to spend like hours, like no joke, hours just to get myself to record because I was terrified of it. Like literally terrified. I would sit down and I would like, I couldn't talk. I couldn't do it. I would freak out. I'd record over and over and over and over and over and be like, that sucked. That sucked. That sucked. And I mean, there were, it probably took me 2 to 3 years truly to like break out and finally be like, oh, this isn't so bad. And like now it's natural. But I mean, it was horrifying. It was like my biggest fear. And I knew repetition was the secret. As long as you're trying to improve, like repetition without improvement is like a waste of time. So many creators make videos and they never change and they never learn. And that's why most fail. I knew that. And so I was always trying to do like 1% a day, a little better. And even now, I still do that. And so I look back 6 months and I go, whoa, I was freaking so boring. Like, what? 3 months ago, I was like that? Our videos were so bad. So if you can't look back for 3 months and look at your content and be like, wow, that's terrible, then you are not ever going to make it, in my opinion.
So how then in that case, how do you know what to improve? Because especially if someone's just starting, like they can improve anywhere and everywhere at that point. It's like, how do you look at your content, break it down and be like, okay, I need to work on just this week instead of being overwhelmed with the amount of changes you could make?
So I actually made a strategy for that. I actually came up with my own process, and every month and every quarter, I would have a goal. So at the beginning of the quarter, January, I'd say, here is my goal. This month, it is art. Or this quarter, it is art. So month one, I'm going to learn thumbnails or maybe Photoshop. Month two, I'm going to learn color theory. Month three, I'm going to study font and typography. Month four, I'm going to study something else that's art related, maybe like text and videos. So I would just bucket things. I would say, what makes a successful video? And I would just be like, okay, thumbnails, how long you hold people, your charisma, entertainment. And then I'd break those out into subgroups. And so that was like an art example. And so I would study it hard. I mean, every day when I'm recording, I'm going to then spend another 1 to 2 hours studying Photoshop, doing tutorials, and kind of just took it one at a time like that.
And so you said you're still making these changes today then. You're still looking back. You're still finding those little spots that you can improve.
Dude, we make more changes now than I've made. I probably make more changes per video than I made in like the first 3 years combined. Like each video goes through a review process where we make up to 100 changes in the edit, usually pre-production. Each video is also reviewed by my team. I mean, it's literally like our goal is obviously to be a big channel. But the real goal is just make good videos. And so it's just about constantly improving. Like we're nowhere near where we want to be. So any year I'll look back and I'll be like, dang, you really were bad back then.
And really, like if you focus on making good videos, that's going to help you achieve the goal of becoming a big channel, right? Like sometimes exactly, people get, yeah, they get too focused on that that end goal that they don't focus on the goals along the way that are going to help them get there. So by focusing on good videos, it's only going to help you grow your channel in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, how many creators have you seen that have 5 million, 6 million, 7 million subscribers and they can't pull 100,000 views a video? These are people that never went through the process. They got lucky. They maybe hit a good game. Maybe they had a skill set that got them there, but they don't know how they got there. They don't have the skills to translate it to other games and so, or other topics or niches. So like, that's why I focus on this. Like, you have to go through the reps. No one can skip the process. And if you do, you're going to see a 2 million subscriber channel that can't pull 10,000 views. That's someone that got lucky and doesn't realize, you know, congrats. Like, you know, you got lucky on year three. Great job. Now you're back to where you probably should be on year four. You got another 6 years, my dude. Keep grinding. Like, you're not where you need to be yet. Probably a lot of people experience that. And that's why a lot of them fail, I think.
That's something I talked about actually on my last podcast with this guy named Arcade Matt, who's been around on YouTube since 2006. And so like, he's still creating, he's still pulling consistent views. But like I was talking about, like, you look at a lot of creators that started early on YouTube, they've fallen off. They didn't keep up with algorithm changes. Like, things happen. They couldn't adapt. They couldn't change up their content. And so I'm curious how you know when it's time to change your content. Like you said, you started making those ARC videos, the first videos, Binding of Isaac. Now, not unfair to say your channel is known for Minecraft. So how do you know when it's time to start making those changes to like a whole content shift, essentially from one game to the next? Like, what are you seeing that makes you think, okay, now's the time to jump to something new?
So gaming is like a different niche than most things, because like, if you're doing a reaction or a real life channel, like, there's not really niche hopping like there is in gaming. Like, if your game dies, doesn't matter if you're Ninja, you know, Ninja can't pull the views he could before. And everyone knows that. And it's because Fortnite's not what it was. So once your game dies, you got to be able to pivot to a new game. And that's different in this niche. And so you just got to be aware of the changing environment. Like, your personality, your videos, your theme, your topic needs to be able to be translated into different games. So for me, I test things. So when Among Us came out, guess what? I tested Among Us hacks and they've all got millions of views. So it translates into any game. And so in that way, I can kind of be safe no matter what comes. And then really watch your views. If your views start dropping, it's pretty clear you're not doing something right. Like for us, we had a fairly large dip. We took a couple months and we're re-strategizing and we're noticing some big trends we're missing out on. And we're going to hop in on those, you know, starting in the next week or two. So you just got to really pay attention to what's getting the views.
And back to those just quickly before I forget this thought around those little 1% changes every week. How do you know that there are changes that you need to make? Like, if you get so caught on, I need to make changes to my videos every single week, how do you make sure you're not just changing things for change's sake and you're actually changing things that are going to improve the video?
You don't always know. And I've told my team, we've made some bad changes that have, you know, been in effect for a long time. Best way to know is to look at your data, you know? We do like one experiment at a time. Today, we're going to test a video where we're going to try a new style, a new intro, whatever. And then we're going to compare it. We might do 3 or 4 tests like that. And then if we see it works really well, guess what? We found our new style. A lot of times they don't work and a lot of times it costs us a lot, but I'm okay because I know that generally it's going to take you 10 years to become greatly, hugely successful, right? If you want tens of millions of subscribers, it's usually going to take you 10 years. And so for me, let's post some flops if it teaches us what not to do, right? So, you know, you don't necessarily want that, but it's kind of hard to learn in YouTube. People don't really share their data with you, you know?
Of course. And how long then so when you're testing something new, you say you try one new thing per video, how long do you run that test for? Is it literally just for that one video and then you make a call then, include it going forward or throw it out? Or do you try it over the course of 3-4 videos to see maybe the first one, something was out of your control and that's why it didn't work? So do you run multiple tests with one change, or do you just do one video, one change and then move on?
We usually do it for about a week. Like, we'll do like 3 videos or so that have a change. Like we came up with a concept, little strategy tip for you. It's called a white Enderman moment. It's what I named it. And it's when you pop something up on screen, you've probably seen it just for a second in the background, but you don't acknowledge it's there. And so we might put something in the background that's like super weird, like a white Enderman in Minecraft. That's a very impossible thing to have. Well, when we do this, people rewind and rewind and rewind and rewind and shoot me a DM and say, yo, how'd you miss that? That's crazy. And so we'll look at our retention curve and it's like huge, massive 50% spike. And so that was a great experiment. And we've like been like, oh, this is a great strategy. So let's add that into our little repertoire. And so, you know, you get a lot of moments like that you can keep.
So with the analytics and looking at the data, is that mainly the two key things you look for? Click-through rate, average view duration, or average watch time? Those are the big two that everyone knows. Is there anything else you're looking at?
I mean, sometimes, yeah, pretty much that's it. But like most people don't realize, like looking at that isn't really what you need to be doing. Like most people don't realize that it's different based on each traffic source. And so if you don't understand traffic sources, then this data is essentially useless to you. You're going to have people look at their data and their click-through rate's higher and their average view duration's higher than normal, but their video is a 10 out of 10 and they don't understand why. And that's because browse and suggested are the two key traffic sources. Well, suggested is normally non-fans, non-subscribers. Browse is usually subscribers. So obviously browse is going to be higher. So if your video really appeals to your fans, but no one else, you could have really high metrics because your fans love it, but the suggested so low, it's not even averaging out. Because what you see is the average of all the traffic sources. So you need to break that down. If you go to advanced analytics, you see it. That is like the key. You have to break it down.
That's a good point though, because I feel like I never heard anyone talk about like the difference in search versus suggested. And I feel like a lot of people, when they focus on the SEO, they're trying to game search. But so what you're saying is to really grow your channel, you need to figure out how to make your video show up suggested more often.
Yeah, pretty much anyone that focuses on search is, unless you're a tutorial channel, like that is really the only case, you are wasting all your time. I mean, nobody, when was the last time you like went to YouTube and you typed in Minecraft videos, you know, like you're going to find the creators you like because it's going to suggest them to you. Like the only time you're searching is if you're trying to find an answer. And also search is like the least valuable viewer, because if you're searching, generally you're looking for something specific. And once you get that, you're leaving. When you're browsing and suggesting videos and clicking, you don't really have a goal. And so you're going to stay a lot longer and more likely become a fan.
Interesting. So how do you then optimize your content so that it becomes suggested more often? Is it using similar tags that other creators are using in the niche? Like what do you do?
We don't use tags at all. So basically to become suggested, it's about hitting metrics YouTube wants, right? So you're looking to make your videos reach people that don't know you, really is what suggested is. And so how do you do that? You make topics around things people want to see. You create thumbnails that people want to click, not your fans, right? I mean, obviously you want your fans to click, but you also want new people to click. So how can you design a video that people that don't know you will watch? If they do, like say YouTube's going to show it to like one person and that guy clicks it and then he watches it all. YouTube's like, yo, that was cool. And then they show it to two more and those guys watch it and click it. Oh, let's show it to four people. And they're going to keep doing that forever until it hits the wall. So for me, my videos get suggested, shows it to Minecraft people. And then if it's like a really good video, they're like, yo, this is great. Let's show it to just gaming people in general. And then after that, they're like, it's still popping. We're going to make up fans. And eventually it's going to hit the genre that really no one cares about Minecraft at that level, which is why Mr. Beast videos go so viral, because it doesn't matter what you're into. His videos appeal to you.
To get people, though, to watch that video first, you need to nail the title and the thumbnail. So let's kind of break those two things down. How do you structure your titles to make sure that it entices someone to click on your video?
We're always trying to improve that. So, you know, in a year, I might just take back what I say, but currently, it is, we call it like a caveman test. Could a caveman understand your title? Is it simple enough that anyone understands it, any age really, or whatever your niche is? Is it under 55 characters? If it's past 55 characters, you're going to see dots. You're going to have, today we're doing the craziest ... No one even knows the title is then. So we have some rules we follow like that. But in general, it is simple. It starts with like the best stuff first, and we're not adding wasted words. Like some of my old titles were like, or a mistake a lot of new creators do is it's like Minecraft Let's Play episode 55. Nobody's clicking that, my dude. There's thousands of people that do it every day. Let's get a little more creative here, right? It's just like has to be something that appeals to people. It's like writing an article. If you don't know how to do that and you don't know how to write a good article, you should probably go write some articles and see if you can get some clicks there. Like there's so many ways to train it.
And then on the thumbnail side, then what do you guys look for in a thumbnail? Is it big picture, like big face of yourself, crazy kind of like looking like you're freaking out about something? Like how do you create your thumbnails?
For us, that's kind of how it is. Like we always have a face because I think the face is important. Like through my research, I was reading and it said like your eyes are super powerful to connect to. And so we try to put our eyes in it just for that reason. But past that, it's like, keep it simple, just like the title. Like you don't need a nasty, blurry, gross screenshot. Like keep it, I think there's a rule. It's like two or three things. That's it. Keep a face in there, a background, and your item or your thing or whatever. You know, Mr. Beast Gaming is a perfect example. It's literally his face and a tree. You know, it's his face and a single house with nothing else. And that's what's going to get you the clicks. Plus, most people view on mobile, which means the thumbnails are even smaller. So if you're not looking at your thumbnails on mobile, then you don't really even know what your fans are seeing. Can they even read your text? You know?
And kind of on that note with can they read your text, how do you tie your thumbnails and your titles together? Because you have such a limited amount of real estate. And I see a lot of beginner creators who will title their video one thing and they'll try and put that title on their thumbnail. So they're wasting real estate in the thumbnail to put the text from their title in the thumbnail. So how do you tie your your thumbnail and your title together to kind of maximize the amount of information you can give the person scrolling in that limited amount of time they see your video for?
Well, I think first you have to understand, what do people look at first, the thumbnail or the title? And the answer is the thumbnail. You look at the picture, then if it's interesting, you're going to read the title. And so you want to make a picture that people want to look at, that is interesting to people. And so bright colors, fancy colors, whatever, like just make it pop, make it simple. And then look at that thumbnail, see if it catches your attention, and then read your title and see if it goes with it. See if it makes you want to click. The thumbnail earns their eyes, the title earns their click. So you want to think about it in a way that's like, this is what's going to make them click. This is what's going to make them look at it.
Thumbnail earns their eyes, the title earns their click.
I don't know if
click.
That's a thing. I just made that
no,
up.
No, but that's good. That's fine. That's why I'm repeating it. I want to emphasize that point. And I think too, what a lot of people get wrong with the title, thumbnail and the title, is people say you can't clickbait, but I think clickbaiting is the key here. You just can't clickbait and switch. I think that's what a lot of people get wrong.
I wouldn't say you want a clickbait. I would say you want a clickable title. So like clickbait is when you're not delivering on the title. That's like when you like, here's like a, you know, here's a naked girl and my video is Minecraft top 10. Like that's clickbait. But when you show something that's like, you know, I just made a thumbnail of a blue tree in Minecraft. This is an impossible thing, but it was actually in my video. There was someone who said you could do this. You could make a blue tree. So we wanted to test it, and that was the thumbnail, and it performed well. So you, there's a difference between clickbait and clickable. So you can make it very clickable while still delivering on what that title says. And that is key.
And so once someone clicks on your video, the next important thing, which people don't talk about enough, is your intro. Because if someone doesn't make it through your intro, then they're not going to be watching the rest of the video. And I know you used to, I think, I don't know where I found the stat, but you used to lose like 60% of your audience in the first 20 seconds, but you've been able to get that down to under 10%. What are some of those changes you've made that have allowed you to drastically reduce the amount of people that jump off your video before the end of the intro?
Yeah, so right now we're like 85 is our target for 30 seconds, 85% still around. And it's like, you should probably put more effort into that first 30 seconds than the rest of the video. Because if people don't stay, then all your work is for nothing. Your pre-production, your planning, your editing, your acting, whatever you're doing, all that is for absolutely nothing. And so to make a good intro, it's about making sure people get what they clicked for. So you've got your title, you've got your thumbnail, you got the click. Now it's time to keep them. So again, if they click on this picture of a blue tree, what are they going to see in the first few seconds? They're going to see a blue tree, whether it's a teaser or a shot or whatever. They're going to know this is exactly what they clicked on. And if they don't ever see it, you're going to see a hockey stick. Huge dip, because everyone leaves in the first 30 seconds because they expected one thing and got another. And so delivering on that expectation is key. And then just delivering it in a way that is very simple. It's so much about simplicity. Like, you want to have a quick, fast intro. These days, that's what it's about. Fast.
So is there a certain time you try to hit? Do you try to have your intros done in the first 30 seconds, first 10 seconds? Like, is there a certain time people should be aiming for?
We don't, you know, we try not to like lock ourselves in because each video is different, but I would say like a good number, like especially on my reactions channel, our intro is literally like 3 seconds and the content starts, you know? We'll do, these are the craziest riddles you've got to see. Boom, riddle one. I mean, it's like one sentence and we start. Now, some are going to need a little more context, but essentially as fast as possible without leaving out important details, you know, like don't tell them things, show them things. Don't say this is the game we're playing and this button does this and this button does this, you know, show them in the content. Today we're playing a game, you know, here's the contestant. He pushes the button and then it happens, right? Like, people are not stupid. They'll understand.
And then what are some of those signals you look for after the video goes live to know that, oh, this is going to do well? Is it that retention 85% to the first 30 seconds? Is it more kind of longer watch time? Is it the click-through rate? Like, what are those signals you see that you're like, oh, this video is going to do really well?
So we look at the click-through rate. If it's lower than normal, we'll have a backup thumbnail ready to swap, or a title. We'll kind of keep pivoting until it hits, because if you can't get that click-through rate right, the rest doesn't really matter. So get that good. If it's not above average or good, change your thumbnail, change your title immediately. And then the second thing is, I'll monitor our average view percentage, not the duration. So I look at the percentage, and depending on video length, different percentages are good. Like, 100% on 1 minute is good. And, you know, 30% on an hour is good. So it depends on the length. We'll look at the AVP. And unfortunately, you can't change that once it's live, really, unless you use the YouTube editor, which sucks. So I'll be able to look at that, and I'll be able to know pretty quickly if it's going to be a banger or flop. Like, if we see like 45, 50% retention on a 10 minute video, it's not going to do too well. If we're seeing 60, 65, okay, we got something to work with here. We see 70, we got a home run.
And what are some of those things right now that you could do to improve your channel?
So many things. Like right now, the biggest thing that we're focusing on is editing and pre-production. So I didn't even plan videos 6 months ago, to be honest. I just had a title and made it up on the spot. Like, that's it. So it's crazy to think about. Now I've got a full pre-production team. Well, it's like three of us. But we work on videos. We try to plan them all, you know, pretty in depth. And, you know, we don't really know what we're doing, to be honest. And so this is a huge opportunity to improve, to have a better story and better attention and, you know, give our editors more to work with. Because the editors can only do so much. So I want to give them the best that we can. And so probably for the next three months, our next quarterly goal, just like we've had before, is pre-production.
So let's talk about then that process. Because I heard somewhere you used to have a pretty strict ideation process. I think it was called like Kanban or something like that. Are you still using that?
Oh yeah, I still use that. It's evolved quite a bit, to be honest with you. So it's like a process where you just, it's very simple. You just move things from the left to the right. So like you start here, then you do this, and then you do this, and then you do this. It's just a very simple, like as if you're moving a sticky note left to right each step of the way. So we still use it. And to be honest, like we change it once a month, like pretty heavily. We tweak things in the systems and the processes. So, you know, in terms of idea creation, we just try to come up with as many as possible. And then we vote on them and kind of go from there. I think that's another area we can improve.
In terms of coming up with ideas, do you go anywhere for inspiration? Is it just sitting down at the desk for like an hour and just rattling off as many ideas as you can? Is it 10 a day? I think James Altucher says that, like the idea muscle or whatever. Like, how do you actually come up with these ideas in practice? Or is it just like throughout your day, they just kind of come to you?
So I have actually hired someone whose job is to basically come up with ideas. Creative director is the role. And so he really comes up with most of them at this point, and I'll tweak them and pivot them. But we'll do group brainstorm sessions like we actually did one this morning, where we just literally get together and just start adding pictures, comments, literally anything. There's like no rules. It's just like make it chaotic and you'll get some crazy ideas. The one rule I use is the Pareto principle, or the 80-20 rule, which is that 20% of your ideas, for example, will bring you 80% of the results. So if you look at any channel like Casey Neistat, 20% of his videos are responsible for 80% of his subscribers. If you filter my most popular, you're going to see there's a couple of videos with 50 million views. In his case, all of them are about flying. So he's really a flights channel. But those videos are responsible for a lot of his growth, like a huge percentage of it. And so we just keep that in mind when we work on ideas. Like probably 80% of these are going to be real bad. Not always, but that's like a good rule of thumb.
And then using kind of that Casey Neistat example, that's interesting. I've never heard anyone look at him as like as a flights channel, because you're right. It's those like luxury.
That's not my idea, by the way. I stole that from Dare Leaves, but yes.
Fair enough. So he's like those luxury flying videos is what has done really, really well for him. But do you think if he just pivoted his channel to just being about luxury flying, it would have done as well? Or do you think it's because they don't happen every time that allowed them to perform as well as they did?
I think that if he did more of them, he would definitely do better. Like I think the thing is there's so much interest in it. Like I am fascinated by those videos because I have no idea what a first class flight looks like. You know, I flew last week to Texas. I'm sitting in the middle of two dudes, like 400 pounds. And I'm like, yo, this sucks. Seeing Casey on a $21,000 seat. It's like, what? That's crazy. And then I think, you know, Dare Leaves, who brought this up, gave him some idea or something. Mr. Beast did. I don't know. They gave him some idea to make another version of this flight video. And, you know, I think it was a year ago, and now it's his third biggest video. So I think he could do more. I don't know if he wants to do more, but it works really well.
And so with your creative director, then when they're coming up with these ideas, what are they doing to come up with them? Is it looking at what other channels are doing, other trends outside of your niche, you know, trying to take what's working elsewhere and applying it to what you're doing? Is it Google Trends, or is it just them, just creative individuals that are coming up with these ideas? Like, what is kind of their process look like?
I don't actually know exactly what his process is, but it's a lot of just writing down as many ideas. They say whoever comes up with the most ideas comes up with the best. And so we try to come up with as many as possible, and we try to make them work if we can. Like, there's some really weird ideas, but that's actually one of the areas we're focusing on right now, is how can we make these even better? Like, we literally had a meeting an hour, it was like 30 minutes ago, and we were talking about this, and we were like, you know, how can we take an idea and make it 10 times crazier? You know, instead of testing Minecraft glitches, what if we survive 24 hours using only Minecraft glitches? You know, like one's like a lot more engaging to a bigger audience, too suggested. And so, yeah, we're just trying to prove it, but really it's just like spamming ideas out.
So then you have this giant list of ideas. You said the top 20% is going to be the best ideas. That's going to lead to 80% of the results. What are you looking for that makes something one of those top 20% ideas? When an idea gets said, what makes you go, yes, that's a good idea?
Probably some people will dislike this answer, but it's your gut. Like, I think a lot of people don't listen to their gut when they should. Like, your gut, it literally feels like a second brain sometimes. It's usually right. Like, come on. Like, you hear a scary noise. What do? You listen to your gut and you run away. Your adrenaline. Like, it's not your brain. It's your gut that does it. And so your gut can tell you the answer a lot of times. And so you kind of develop this skill over time. And you're just going to know. Like, you just know. Your gut's like, this is it. This is huge. And you know it's huge. And usually it is huge. And, you know, I actually tell my team a lot, like, guys, trust your gut more. Like, if you have a video idea and you're like, I don't know, and you're not really sure why, but you just don't feel it, don't do it. Wait until you feel it. Like, it's kind of, it guides you a lot. Like, it's guided us for all of human evolution, right? All of history. You know, there's no reason to ignore that, I don't think so.
I know you're a big reader, and I'm reading the book Power of the Subconscious Mind, I believe it's called. Because your brain is basically, it's all about telling your subconscious mind, like, what you're going for. And it's like all about rewiring your brain to look for those things. I think your gut is like, it knows what you're looking for. So your gut's kind of like your subconscious mind identifying things that it knows your conscious mind is looking for. And that's when your gut is telling you to do things, when it's in alignment with what your conscious mind is looking for.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole other topic. I'm obsessed with the subconscious mind to the point where I feel like part of the reason I got here was because of it. Because, like, think about this real quick. Like, to you, everyone listening, if you all right now, like, look around in your room or wherever you are and look for the color orange and count, how many do you see? Like, if you look around, you're like, how much orange? And you get a number, right? And then you close your eyes and the question is, how many blue things did you see? You have no idea because you're looking for orange. And it just shows you how much you are seeing what you're looking for. Like, whatever you look for, you're going to find. And so if you look for success, you find it. If you look for reasons why YouTube hates you and the algorithm sucks, that's all you're going to see, and you're never going to make it past that stage. So yeah, mastering your mind is so important. A lot of people don't give it the credit it needs.
Focusing your mind on what you want to look for. I think that's so important. But jumping back to the ideas quickly, I just listened to an interview that Logic did, and he was talking about, like, he has like thousands of songs written, but you don't hear them all. And he's recently started going back and looking at some of these old ideas and old songs and be like, oh, there was something here. And he takes it and reworks it now with the knowledge that he has. And now it's a new song that he can use. Do you ever go back and look at that huge, massive list of ideas that didn't make the cut and be like, and figure out ways to actually use them now?
Yeah, we have a list called the Idea Catalog. And it's just every idea we like but can't do, or maybe we're not sure about it. And we'll just, like, post it on that list. And so I'm not sure how big it is, but I'll kind of go through and, like, you know, chop out the bad ones and then, like, maybe tweak some good ones. And they'll just sit there and simmer for months to years. And then maybe we'll never use it, or maybe we'll be like, wait a minute, I see it. It's here. And then we'll pop it on. And it'll be a good video.
And then what else is involved in that pre-production process? Are you scripting your video? I mean, it's kind of tough because you don't exactly know how the video is going to play out. But, like, is there any other steps in that pre-production process?
We kind of play with it a little bit. Like, we're always, you know, we're still learning. So I wouldn't listen to whatever I say because I don't exactly know the right best way. But we'll kind of plan the video. We'll lay out an idea of what we want it to look like. You know, here's the intro at this point in the video. This should happen. Here's the ending. Make sure we cut it at the climax, whatever. Like, we'll just kind of script it in a way that it's not telling me what to say. More of kind of like, hey, this could happen here. It's almost like an inspiration board for me, just so I know kind of what to expect. Very loose. It's like I said, though, like, it's something that we kind of built without any experience, anyone in pre-production on my team. So, you know, it could be way wrong. Like, that's the thing. Like, you just got to go and see if it works. And then eventually it'll get there. You can't, like, be afraid to try something.
And then what's your filming schedule like? Because you're posting, are you daily still? Are you less? No.
So I post less than daily now because I wanted more time to focus on quality. So I do 4 gaming a week, 4 reacts a week, 5 shorts a week. So it's shorts. I mean, you know, I can bust those out in 2 hours. And then I just record Monday through Friday. I actually try to take weekends off.
That's awesome. And so that's 8 videos. So are you trying to do like record 2 videos a day or anything like that? Or is it trying to knock out more in a day? Or like, what does that look like?
I got to stick to a pretty strict schedule. So like, Monday, for example, like, you know, Mondays kind of suck. So Mondays I'll do 1 gaming video, right? A little light. Tuesdays though, you know, Tuesday I feel pretty good normally. So I'm going to do 2 reacts videos and all 5 shorts on Tuesday. So I'm doing 7. Wednesday I'll do a gaming and a TikTok. So it's just kind of like, really I set it up based on like my general mood on the day. So like Friday is a good day, so I can do a little extra because I know it's like, it's Friday, let's go. I'm going to have some fun this weekend, whatever. Thursday, you know, Thursdays kind of suck. It's the day before Friday. I'm just going to do 1 video that day and focus on other things. So I just set it up to kind of adapt to me.
How hard was it for you to get to a point where you were taking breaks, taking weekends off? Because I feel like with creators and entrepreneurs, like, that's such a hard thing to come to. You feel like if you're not working, you're falling behind. And that's not necessarily a healthy mindset. So how did you come to the point where you are now comfortable taking breaks on the weekend.
There's a guy who I met, to be honest, I don't know how, but he's like a millionaire, I guess, in Germany. I'm not even sure if he's real. I think he is. If he's listening, I think you're real. Anyway, he owns a couple companies and he was telling me I need to take some breaks. And he's like, yeah, you got to do it. And I was like, I don't think you understand. Like, I love this. I don't want a break. But he just encouraged me for like weeks and I did it. And I was like, I feel sick. This is disgusting. Like, I genuinely felt sick when I had to break. I basically forced myself to do it. And I still do, honestly. Like, I still really don't like breaks. And I honestly still work a little bit on Saturday and sometimes Sunday. But it's set up in a way that if I choose to do nothing, I can. And if I maybe want to knock out an email or something quick, I can do that too. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I look at it in terms of like 10 years, where am I going to be? Do I want to be burnt out in 3 years and like, you know, then I'm done? Or do I want to take it a little slower and 10 years, I'm still going strong?
And part of the way you're going to make sure you're still going strong is to continue hiring people and building the team around you so you don't have to do everything, which you're already doing. But how do you make sure as you scale, as this company grows, and as you have more people helping create your content, that you don't end up outsourcing the part you like to do? Like, maybe you really like coming up with ideas and now that task has gone to somewhere else. Like, how do you make sure that the reason you started creating and why you love to do this remains part of your day-to-day and you don't become more of a business more often than doing the creative part that you love to do?
You know what's interesting is it's actually changed. So when I first started YouTube, I loved doing creative. I loved editing. I loved all of it. And I still do like it. But now I've learned that I actually like the business aspect of it as much as what I love the creative as before, because the business gives me a whole new set of skills to focus on. Now, instead of focusing on thumbnails, which I feel like I've gotten great, now I focus on leadership. Now I focus on training. Now I focus on hiring. And so it gives me a whole new world of things to study with really unlimited potential. And it's crazy. You know, I have a second business, my Minecraft server. Over here, it's the same thing. I don't know anything about game development. So now I get to study game development. And it's like always having things to focus on is so enjoyable to me. I feel like I didn't necessarily hit the limit in anything thumbnail-wise, creativity. You know, there's still so much to grow. But there's a point where it's like your rewards for the effort are not the same as they were before. It's like skiing, you know? You learn to ski, you spend 8 hours, now you can go down a hill. But then to be able to do a flip, you know, or to be able to get to that next level, you're not going to make the same improvement you did from being unable to even stand to being able to go down a hill. Like, it's the diminishing returns settle in. And so you got to either continue and become a master at that one thing, or in my case, it gets boring, so I move on.
And now you're skill stacking. So you're still becoming one of the top people in the world. But a lot of people think to become the top in the world at something, they have to be like the best thumbnail designer on the planet. Or you become the person that's really good at thumbnails, that's also really good at on camera, that's good at the business stuff, that's good at game dev, that's building the Minecraft server, that's built a massive Discord. Like, you can stack your skills on top of each other and you can create a unique skill set that you are the best at in the world of all of those things combined.
I think that's like finding people that are better than you at those skills, you know? Find people that are better than you and they can become that master. They can become the thumbnail master. And I'm going to teach them what I know and they're going to become that person. So yeah.
And you said that word master. And from my understanding, you felt though before that you needed to be able to be the master at editing and master that skill before you could hire someone because you didn't want them to know more than you did. But you said that's not the case anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. It was partly an ego thing. I thought, you know, nobody can edit as good as me. Nobody can edit. They don't have the same vision as me. Now my editors are so much better than I ever was. And my artists are pretty close. I wouldn't say they're quite to where I'm at, but I've done it for, you know, 5,000 of these thumbnails. So I would say that they will pass me in certain things and other things I can teach them and they can teach me. And it's awesome. Like my artists have improved so much so quickly. And it took me until 2 months ago, by the way, to hire my first thumbnail artist because I thought nobody could do it like me. And I finally said, okay, find someone who's close. They'll get there. And they got there. And now I would say if they're not past me now, they will be within the next couple of weeks.
Was it hard then? I'm assuming it is, but to hand off, like even in the beginning when you first hired an editor, how hard was it for you to hand off part of that creative process? But kind of to follow that up, how beneficial has it been?
It was impossible to do at first. But this is when I started working as a engineer in Big Pharma. So I'm working 8-9 hours a day. I'm coming home recording. Then I'm editing my own video. I'm making no money. And I'm like, I can't keep doing this. Like I was like at the point where I was like, I will do whatever it takes to become a YouTuber. Like I hate my job. So I hired a guy on Reddit named Joao and he still works for me today. And he's absolutely amazing. But I paid him $20 a video and I usually made about $5 a video. So I lost a lot of money. And it was so hard, you know, we made the worst videos together and we look back at them like, yo, we thought this was fire. And it was really, really, really hard to do. And I just knew that if I wanted to get there, I had to do it. And you got to fight your ego. Your ego is going to tell you you're the best. You're not the best. And if you keep doing it, you're probably not going to go probably to where you want to be.
And then with your videos, what on the spectrum of good enough to perfect do you focus on? Because similar to your skills where you say like eventually you get to diminishing returns, how much like on that spectrum of good enough to perfect do you focus on with your editors? Because obviously you want it to be close to perfect, but then that could add so much time to what you're doing. So kind of where do you land on that spectrum with your videos?
What's the quote? Perfection is the enemy of progress. And so we target improvements that will make what we believe to be a reasonable difference in retention. And so I'm not going to see something really, really tiny and change it. I might leave a comment and say, hey, watch out for this. Don't fix it. But I'm really not a perfectionist at all. I mean, I just really don't perfection anything. I just wing it. And so when it comes to edits, I try to give them the best feedback I can, make the best video that I can without getting to that point. And it's a gut feeling, really is.
So what would your advice be to aspiring content creators and YouTubers, like someone that's in your position that you were in 5 years ago, where they're putting up videos, they're not seeing the traction yet, they want to become a full-time YouTuber, but they just haven't figured out how to kind of break that glass ceiling and start getting some growth?
I think that these people that are in that position need to remember that they need to put more effort into themselves than into their work. If they put effort into themselves more than their videos, they're going to become a person worthy of success, right? Because if you don't have the right mindset, if you don't have these other skills, like you got to learn Photoshop. You got to put time into yourself to be able to make a thumbnail and understand what's a good thumbnail. And so if you're not putting in massive work, more work into you than you are into your recording, more work into you than you are into your, anything else and your editing, unless editing is the work you're putting in, you got to put this in. You got to learn it. You got to master your mind, master those skills. And then the most important part of it all is your mentality. The most important reason people fail, or the most important thing you can do, is keep your mentality right. So many people think they're not going to make it. And guess what? They don't make it. I always knew I would make it. There was never a doubt in my mind. Even now, I still know we are going to be a huge channel. One day we're going to have millions, tens of millions. I might get there. In my mind, it has already happened. Like it's already there. Now I just got to find the path to get there. And I know that path exists. I just got to find what it is. And if your mentality isn't that confident and you don't feel that, then you need to figure out why that is. You need to fix it. That was a lot of advice, but that's my advice.
That's good advice. You know, because I'm always expecting something when I ask that question, always something tactical or like just be consistent. But like, I've never had anybody, this is episode 169. I've never had anybody say like, focus on yourself before the content to make sure you're someone worthy of success. And I think that's a really good point. It kind of comes back to what we're talking about with the subconscious mind, right? It's like having that inner belief that you can make it and then wiring your brain to look for those opportunities that will help you get there. So I think that's really, I know it was a lot, but it was really good advice. And
like that's kind of like going back to the people with millions of subs that lose it. It's like they maybe didn't build themselves into the person they had to be yet. And they still can. It's not like it's over. But, you know, say you become a millionaire. The $1 million isn't important. It's who you became to become a millionaire, because now you can become a millionaire again because you know what it takes. So become that person. And now I could, you know, if I lost my channel, I would be back to where I am in a year. Right. I know what it takes.
That's a really good point. Like the difference between like so many people, they want that quick growth. They want to just wake up tomorrow with a million subs. But like to your point, by putting in the time, and it might take a little longer, but by putting in that time, it's going to make you so much better in the long run than just getting like flash in the pan success and then having to figure it out once you're there. So I think that's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, I would add on too, like studying success is equally as important as studying failure. So I studied very successful people, Leonardo DiCaprio, Leonardo da Vinci, LeBron James, people that were famous now, people that used to be famous. Almost every one of them, without exception, took 10 years to become the legends they were. And that's almost like a rule of life, 10 years of constant improvement. And so I look at myself and I'm like, dang, I started in 2016. I was like, what, 5 years ago? Like not even halfway there yet. Like, geez, I got so much left. So it's exciting. It's inspiring when you think about it that way.
I think it should be exciting and inspiring. And if you're somebody who's listening to that and you go 10 years, man, I don't want to do this for 10 years, then you're probably doing the wrong thing. It should be exciting and inspiring to hear that it's going to take 10 years. So I think that's a good little signal to you if you're on the right path or not. If you just heard that 10 years and you went, man, I don't want to do this for 10 years, that might be a little unlock for you. But with YouTube specifically, what is something that you think you believe about YouTube that most people don't?
That's a good question. I think a lot of people blame YouTube for their issues, and I never do. I think that you're where you deserve to be. I'm at 3 million subs almost because I deserve there. I'm not at 10 because I'm not a 10 million subscriber person yet. I'm not there. So if you have 1,000 subs or 100 or zero, you can't pull any views, I think it's your fault. I think you are not good enough yet. And it's a hard pill to swallow, but you can't blame anyone else. Like once you take that ownership, then you can change it. If it's YouTube's fault, then why even make videos? You can't control it. So just quit, you know? So many people are just like, oh, it's YouTube. And they like whine about it. And I'm like, literally, it's your fault. Just get better, you know, put in the work. If you can't do that, then find something else.
Who's someone you're seeing on YouTube right now? And I'm going to make a caveat to this question that isn't Mr. Beast, that's doing something really good right now. Like you see them and you're like, man, that's smart. They're doing this well.
I think there's a lot of creators that, you know, kind of copy Mr. Beast style that are doing really good. But I think in the Minecraft niche, there's some creative channel like Mick Yum. He's a guy that I know. He makes really creative, like short Minecraft skits that just pop off. You know, there's a lot of like up and coming Minecraft creators that make really unique content, and they kind of bring like a new angle. Like Quiff is a Minecraft YouTuber. He creates really interesting videos with his friends that pop off. It's cool to see all the different, you know, like different styles of videos that pop up and do so well. And so you can look at that and be like, wow, like Minecraft exists and there's 50 billion different ways to make videos. And it's probably a lot of undiscovered ways out there that you can make videos with. But I would say though, Crafty. I love Crafty's videos. Crazy.
I ask everyone this question on the podcast. I know you just said that if your everything went away, you'd be back to where you are in a year. But the question I always ask is, so if your channel, if you woke up tomorrow and everything was gone, where would you start? How would you get back to where you are?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't even think about where I am now too much. I just think I'm literally like on this journey. And so I would probably be like, dang, this sucks. But I'm still on the same journey. I'm still at the same spot in my mind on this mountain. My skills are all still here. And like, that's the thing, you can't lose your skills. And so I've got those skills that I've developed. I'm just going to keep developing them. Like right now, my goal is multiple tens of millions. So I'm not there now. And if I lost everything, I'm still not there. So really, what does it change? You know, that's my goal and I'm going to get there.
And what's stopping you from getting there? Is it just time?
Oh, right now, I don't think I'm good enough. You know, I don't even know how to make pre-production pipelines correct yet for these videos we want to produce. I'm still studying storytelling. I have so many skills I want to get better at, even like charisma wise. I'll be a lot more entertaining, a lot more confident. Like, I just feel like there's so many areas I can improve. You know, I can collab better. Like, there's a huge list of things. And so, yeah, I'm not there yet because I have so much more to learn.
Back in 2016, you posted a video about how you need to make every day matter and do something a little bit different every single day. How are you doing that today?
Fun fact, by the way, I used to make those videos because I was trying to motivate myself. Like, I would make motivational videos for me. But I think now, like, I kind of ask myself at the end of the day, almost every day, you know, are you happy? Like, are you happy today? You know, like, did you do what you wanted? Did you improve? What are you proud of? Like, I would just ask myself that question almost every night in bed. And if I say no, then I ask myself why. Like, what did you do wrong? What are you going to do different tomorrow? And then I set up my goal is like, okay, tomorrow I'm going to do this different to make sure I'm back on track. Because if you answer no too many times in a row, something is, you know, something's going to get wrong soon if it's not wrong already. So just like check in with yourself. Be like, are you getting better? Like, be honest.
And then besides that, like little check-in at night, what's then everything that happens before that? What's the daily routine from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed?
So I'm really bad at waking up, but I try to wake up at 6 and I snooze till between 7 and 8, depending on the day. Then I get up and I usually honestly drink like the smallest amount of pre-workout, like not even like a molecule, but just enough that my brain thinks it's enough. And then usually I'll lift in the morning for about 30 minutes. Take a shower, grab some coffee, and then I'm going to start working usually between 8 to 9 at the latest. And then from then, I'm probably going to work from, I don't know, 8 or 9 until between 5 and 7. Sometimes if I'm like, I'm not feeling it today, well, I'm a YouTuber, so I can just not work for, you know, a couple hours. Go watch a movie. Like, you know, I don't think you should feel guilty if you're not feeling it to take a break every now and then. Trust your body. And then, yeah, once I'm done with work, I'll take a break for a minute, and then I try to box a lot. So I have like a little boxing bag in my spare room and I'll just punch away any frustrations from the day. And then usually I'm done.
So will you be calling out Jake Paul anytime soon? Or?
Well, I would also add to that, I am 5'6". So I don't know that I'll be in any YouTuber fights.
And when did you change the sleeping to getting up at 6? Because I know you used to be a guy who would just will let your body wake up naturally. So what led to that shift to trying to get up at 6 every day?
I don't know. I've been experimenting with sleep, to be honest. I'm actually obsessed with sleep. You know, that's another topic for another day, but I'm obsessed with it and I'm obsessed with optimizing it. And, you know, part of the reason was I was like, yo, I'm sleeping a third of my life. There's got to be a better way. And so I was like, I don't have to sleep 8 hours. And so I researched it and turns out I convinced myself if I don't, I'm going to die and lose everything. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm just like always playing with my schedule and agenda. Pretty much everything in my life, from my work to my own life, is like an experiment. It's really weird.
No, I think that's a good thing, though. I don't think that's like, you're just looking for the best way to get things done. So I don't think that's a weird thing at all. But I'm curious, how often do you look back on the whole journey. You know, I know we really didn't get a chance to dive into your story, and you have a really interesting and inspirational story. You overcame a lot to get to where you are. Maybe we'll have to have you back and really dive into that, because I think it's a really good, an inspirational story, like I said. But how often do you look back on everything? Not just these last 5 years on YouTube, like going back to that kid that was in Scouts that went to the Dominican Republic, which inspired you to go to school. Like, how often do you look back on that entire journey, the kid that played RuneScape to where you are now?
I do it like not infrequently. Whenever I'm feeling down about things, you know, they say zoom out to get the whole perspective. And so I'm like, oh man, my video flopped. But then I zoom out and I remember where I'm at and what I would have said, you know, if I knew I'd be here 3 years ago, I couldn't tell you how happy I'd be. And so I zoom out, you know, a lot of times I'll do it if I take a late night shower and, you know, you get deep in your thoughts and you're like, yo, what is life? Like kind of like that kind of thinking. You're just like into your brain. And yeah, sometimes that'll pop up and I'm like, dang, I can't believe I did all this. And then I wake up the next day and I'm like, dang, my video is not good enough. I got to do better. So it's a nice little, it comes in sometimes.
For my last question, I like to flip the script a little bit. So instead of me asking the question, it's you asking the question, but it's not to me. So pretend you have a crystal ball. You can ask this crystal ball any question. You'll get the 100% honest answer. What is one question you want to know the answer to?
Ooh, I would say the one question I'd want to know the answer to is, this is weird, but I want to know what day I'm going to die. I would want to know that. Because like, you know, it's like, yo, you're going to die tomorrow. I'd probably change things a little bit, you know? I think that'd be interesting. Like, oh, you got 25 years left. That would probably change. I don't think it should, but it definitely would. I'd be like, yo, 10 years left, you know, it changed everything.
I don't know if I could get the answer to that question. Then the anxiety builds as you get closer and closer to that date. So I don't know if I want to know.
That's true. That is true. I wasn't thinking about that, but I'm always curious about it. Like I think about that sometimes. Like, you know, you could die really whenever. And so I'd be curious. Now I don't know.
Fair enough. But because people always ask, like, what would you do if you die? We're going to die tomorrow. But I feel like that, like, to try and figure what their passion is. But I feel like that's such the wrong question to ask, because everyone's going to operate completely differently if they know they're going to die tomorrow. So it's like, what would you do? I mean, this is completely separate from what you're saying, but it just sparked in my head. It's like, if you knew you were going to be successful 15 years from now, what would you do in that 15 year time? Like, if you knew at the end you'd be successful, like, where would you come out of? Like, what would you be doing? What would you do differently if you knew you'd be successful? And I'm assuming for you, you'd do exactly what you're doing now.
I probably, if I changed anything, like say I, you know, had to change something, I'd probably do just a slight less amount of work, so that I had a little more time for friends and family. I feel bad a lot because I'm working so much on weekdays and stuff. Like, I'll miss calls and stuff. And I never really wanted to get to this position. So we're trying to not be like that as much.
Fair enough. But I know we're out of time here. You got to jump. So I just want to give you the floor super quickly. Where can the people find you? Plug anything and everything you got right now.
Find me on everything at Loverfella, except Twitter, which is Loverfella TV, because some dude stole it and I don't know who he is and he won't answer me. And finally, if you play Minecraft, join my server, play.loverfella.com. It's amazing.
Awesome. I want to thank you for taking the time to come on the podcast. I really appreciate it. I want to thank everybody for listening, whether you listen the entire way through or you only listen to bits and pieces. I really appreciate you taking time to check this out. Everyone, do me a big favor. Go and subscribe to Loverfella. Everything he just said will be linked in the show notes. It'll be linked in the description down below so you can find it. If you'd like to follow me, you can find me everywhere on social media at the Jacob Kelly. Feel free to come and say hello. My DMs are always open. As always, today's podcast is powered by TrueFan. Thank you once again for listening. We'll talk soon.